Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, everyone, live from Marin County, California, and the beautiful city of Escondido. Welcome to This Week in Oncology, it's a special edition. And today we're going to feature our round one of a conversation with one of the three finalists in the Crowd Care for Cancer Supporting Survivors Challenge, which is sponsored, a joint initiative sponsored by the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology and the National Cancer Institute, supported by the Health 2.0 Development Challenge and the MedStarter platform. So that's a mouthful, but let me just welcome you to our broadcast today. I am very excited. We're going to meet one of the principal collaborators in the Journey Forward My Care Plan entry, and we're going to speak with Dr. Patricia Gans. And let me tell you briefly a little bit about Dr. Gans. For two decades, Dr. Patricia Gans has conducted groundbreaking research that has changed the face of cancer survivorship. A founding member of the National Coalition of Cancer Survivors, Gans is considered the top national expert on quality of life after breast cancer, and her leading-edge studies have changed the way the medical field views the post-treatment health problems faced by millions of former patients nationwide. So with that as a very broad brush and understated CV summary for Dr. Gans, let me kick it over to Rich for you, and let's hear a little bit more about the Journey Forward My Care Plan app.
Great. Thanks, Greg. And welcome, Dr. Gans.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We were talking before we went on air, and we were talking about your extensive involvement in cancer survivorship. And both of us trained at about the same time, as it turned out. And at that time, I don't know about your training, but I presume it was similar to mine, we didn't talk much about cancer survivorship. And now it's currently at the front end of our plate when we're dealing with cancer patients and families. So how did you get involved in it originally?
Sure. Well, you're right. You know, when we trained in oncology, maybe only about a third or more of patients who we were treating for cancer could expect to live for 5 years. It was a pretty dismal and gloomy time for people. But as the use of combination chemotherapy, earlier diagnosis, complex multimodal therapy with surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, prolonged adjuvant therapies. None of these things existed when I began my training. But as we began to really improve our treatments for cancer, there emerged increasing numbers of cancer survivors. And as was mentioned, I actually became a founding member of the National Coalition for Cancer Survivors, which was actually founded in 1986, which again was a long time ago, you know, more than 25 years ago. Yeah. But founded by Fitzhugh Mullen, who had written a very prescient article in the New England Journal about the seasons of survival, and really kind of on the leading edge of the fact that we had many more individuals surviving. And again, he had a germ cell tumor in the chest, but testicular cancer, as we know, was just revolutionized by the addition of cisplatin in the late 1970s, early 80s, and those young men who used to be on their deathbeds were now cured. So I think this is exemplifying what's happened. And today we have an estimated 13.7 million individuals who are long-term survivors of cancer. That's about 4 or 5% of the U.S. population. And for these individuals, they're certainly very happy to be living, but they may be, in fact, suffering with some of the consequences of their treatments, and they may live long enough to get into trouble with late effects that might affect their heart, their kidneys, their lungs, or even second or third cancers. And as a result, many of them are saying, well, you did a great job curing me. What do I do next? How can I maximize my health? And to just kind of summarize where we were about 7 or 8 years ago, in 2005, the Institute of Medicine issued a committee study report. I was on that committee, which basically focused on the adult cancer survivor population and talked about them being lost in transition, that after they finished their treatment, they didn't know what to do. And recommendation two from that report was that every patient completing curative therapy should have a treatment summary and care plan telling them what they needed to do in the next phase after their cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. So that's right. Really where we were at that point in time.
Okay. So tell us, bring us up to date about your current project and how you're approaching this problem from a modern day point of view.
Sure. Well, as a result of that Institute of Medicine report, I was actually approached by a phenomenally energetic woman from WellPoint, Anthem and WellPoint, who said, you know, what can we begin to do as an insurance company, but as a community, to address the IOM report? And we began brainstorming and working together. And in the fall of 2006, we actually got together with representatives from the National Coalition for Cancer Survivors, my organization, my UCLA Survivorship Center, and Genentech to brainstorm about what we could do as a collaboration to facilitate the use of treatment summaries and care plans. And over the subsequent 2 years, actually developed the tool that's called Journey Forward. And our simplistic idea was that if we could just make it really easy for oncologists in their office to generate a treatment summary and care plan for patients with drop-down menus. And we actually adapted templates that ASCO had developed, the American Society of Clinical Oncology. I'd been involved in making those templates, so it was a little bit incestuous. But we used those tools as the templates that we actually kind of automated in a web-based tool that could be downloaded to an individual practitioner's PC, and patient information could be entered and stored, and a very nice report could be generated for the patient. But what we learned, certainly over the last 4 or 5 years, is that there was a lot of resistance to actually doing this, and everybody found excuses for not doing this. There have been cancer centers and institutions that have decided to adopt this, and the American College of Surgeons accreditation now for the certification for cancer programs is now requiring it, so there's a lot more interest in institutional documentation of treatment summaries and care plans, but it's still not disseminated as far as we would like. So what happened was, because we have a really nice platform that's really oriented towards health professionals, physicians, and nurses, I should say ONS, the Oncology Nursing Society, joined us about 3 or 4 years ago, and because we realized that the nurses were absolutely critical to delivering this kind of information. And with this, we actually developed an outstanding resource library that's on the Journey Forward website, so that we've got tools and information from ONS, from the American Cancer Society, from ASCO, from many other organizations that are sitting there resident, so that if a health professional determined that somebody had lymphedema or pain or sleep disorder, they could pick off the library some resources that they could actually give to the patient, and also obviously they could generate local resources. Anyway, this is a terrific platform, but our challenge is that health professionals are not taking this up as we would like. So over the last 6 months, we thought, how can we activate the patient? is there a way we can get the patient to be empowered and a partner in this process, get them to initiate, at least start to do the treatment summary and care plan? They can certainly write down the names of their doctors. They can have some information about the dates of their diagnosis and treatment. But could they begin to complete this and then bring it into their physician and say, you know, can you help me finalize this? I don't remember exactly what drugs I got. Could you write it down for me? Could you tell me what kind of late effects that I might have, or could you point me in the right direction? And so we began working on the My Care Plan application component of Journey Forward as a way to make the patient initiate and empower them to get what they really feel that they need so that they don't have to passively wait for the healthcare provider to initiate this. So that's what our tool is about.
Okay, so the current tool has to do with the patient input as far as the program is concerned, and trying to empower the patient to be responsible, at least to some extent, for gathering this information.
I don't think they actually have to gather it, but just to initiate the process.
Okay.
I don't know how it was when you were in practice, or are in practice still. But you know, when a patient brings in to me a clipping or an article or something from the internet, I have to pay attention to it. And so I think if a patient actually says, "I want a care plan, and I've started to do this, and I've filled it out the best I can you help me finish it?" The physician or the nurse is very likely to help them.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I think that. Involvement of the patient more and more is what's really the key, because, as you said, physicians have been overburdened. I know in my practice, we're now on our second electronic medical record system, and it eats up all of our time just dealing with the computer, so we don't have a heck of a lot of time for anything else in our daily lives, unfortunately. And so I found, like it sounds like you have, that relying on the physicians is not going to maximize the program. So I think it's important that the tack that you've taken is more likely to be successful.
And I think it also communicates to the physician or the nurse that the patient wants more information. They want to know how they can maintain their health. They want to know, well, what kind of schedule of follow-up do I need? Do I need any special scans or tests? Because even though we may verbally communicate this to our patients, and I think many physicians are good about doing that, having something written down, certainly, you know, as time passes and the further a patient is away from their time of diagnosis and treatment, the more likely they're going to kind of forget about what they need to do. And so this is a way of kind of reminding them.
Now, who's in charge of this? I mean, like I was referring to empowering the patient to get involved more and more. So let's say that I come in and to my doctor and I ask for this document to be completed. I get it back. Then it says that part of my follow-up is to be with my primary care physician, and it lists who's responsible for what as far as who's going to be ordering certain tests, how often would I see the oncologist, et cetera, et cetera. Who's, in other words, it defines responsibilities,
so,
which previously, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, the whole thrust of the IOM report was that patients are anxious for communication about how their care should be coordinated. And instead of going to four or five different doctors who may all be doing kind of the same thing, still there might be gaps, you know, so maybe everybody's tending to, you know, making sure the mammogram or the colonoscopy is done, but nobody's making sure their cholesterol is measured or, you know, that they're on a diet and exercise regime. So I think and a lot of the frustration that a lot of people have is they think, oh, the written report is the end-all, be-all, and that's not really the case. by having this kind of treatment summary and care plan, we expect that this will facilitate a conversation. And it does not have to be with the physician. It can be with the nurse or someone else in the office. Many patients actually have psychological and social distress that is not attended to, and often that's what they're needing at this point in time. But the idea is that we're acknowledging and recognizing that the kinds of things that need to go on once you finish the complex cancer treatment are a little bit different. And the health professional needs to guide you about, well, you know, you really don't need to have a bone density except every 2 years, or you don't really need to get those tumor markers or scans because there's no evidence that they're valuable. So
right, and that's obviously more cost effective as well. It would lead to appropriate testing. Mm-hmm. Rather than what we're going through now. I think this is one giant step forward as far as helping to manage these possible problems that arise later on. I know that more and more in my practice, I'm faced with people who are surviving a longer and longer time. And I just as a sort of an oh by the way, I've asked several of them, like breast cancer patients who are doing well 15, 20 years later, are you doing anything that I don't know about? You know, you thought might irritate your primary physician or me. If you did something like this, and I reassure them that I'm not going to judge anybody about anything, but you'd be surprised how many people, or I don't think you would be surprised, but how many people are doing yoga, how many people are doing exercise programs. These were not recommended, you know, by anybody, but patients decided that it was important for them, so they took the initiative and initiated these things on their own. So more and more people are getting into what used to be called alternative treatments that they felt that doctors might frown upon, like yoga or acupuncture or something of that nature. And yet they're thriving on these, and nutrition is very crucial too.
Yeah, and so, I think those are really exemplary of what people want to do to enhance and sustain their well-being.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And is there anything on these forms that addresses some of these, shall we say, off two standard deviations to one side, what we used to recommend, but now might be added to the list?
Well, these are actually,
considered?
So those strategies, actually many of them are in fact evidence-based. My colleagues and I here at UCLA did a randomized trial for women who had persistent fatigue after breast cancer, and we did a yoga intervention with Iyengar yoga and found significant improvement. It was compared to an attention control education class. And while mood was similar in both groups, the group that did the Iyengar yoga had a significant improvement in fatigue. And these were women who were already persistently fatigued many years after their breast cancer treatment. And there are likewise many other studies. So what you're calling alternative medicine, the current term for that is integrative oncology. And many leading cancer centers actually incorporate these services into their care. And what you're going to be seeing very shortly are evidence-based guidelines or guidance statements coming out from the American Society of Clinical Oncology. I'm, in fact, on a panel right now that's going to come out with a guideline on fatigue. And you're going to see that many of the symptoms that cancer survivors complain about do have systematic strategies that are not all a pill. Many of them are going to be behavioral or lifestyle changes. But I think what the cancer survivor community is saying is, I'm so happy to be alive, but I have pain, I have fatigue, I have anxiety, I have insomnia, I have lymphedema. And, you know, it's not that there's cancer that needs to be treated anymore, but I need to know how to manage these late effects or ongoing symptoms from the treatment. And if you look at the Journey Forward website, you're going to see that there are going to be information sheets for patients on how to manage these symptoms, particularly from the Oncology Nursing Society. And there are, in fact, the NCCN has a guideline now out there for cancer survivors. And as I mentioned, the American Society of Clinical Oncology is developing guidance statements for about 18 of these symptoms. So the actual evidence-based practice tools are emerging now, so that when the patient who's a survivor comes in with their MyCare plan and they've checked off, we do have a symptom list there, they've checked off that they have insomnia or they have pain or they have vaginal dryness, you're going to know that this is a problem, and you or your nurse or someone on your staff is going to be expected to try and help them, just as you would have helped them treat the tumor. We need to help treat these persistent problems.
Well, that's terrific. I had a little a motive for bringing this issue up, because I'm currently forming an integrative oncology program in our practice, and it's interesting that it's only lately that the group has become more, shall we say, supportive of that effort. It's taken me a shorter period of time, but than it's taken you to get the others involved, but that's a very critical aspect of quality of life that I'm finding is more and more requested, shall we say, by patients and their family members. And even some of the family members tend to ask for that. So I'm really thrilled that all of this is included in the various programs, and information is available to patients and their families, so that what you're, in summary, what you're saying is that this is actually the patient then goes to the website and
yes.
gets the MyCare plan.
Mm-hmm. And they can
okay.
download it on their computer, and they can complete it as well as they can. They can also look at the resources, but we feel like it's better for them to actually bring it in to their health professional who can guide them, mm-hmm. you know, who can help complete it and say, well, based on what I know about your treatment, you know, we need to look out for this or that. You need to have scans at some interval. Or let's say we know that weight gain is a problem for patients with colon or cancer or breast cancer or prostate cancer. We need to help you get on some kind of a weight reduction program. You know, so it really needs to be tailored by the health professional. But I think the mm-hmm. fact that the, you know, as you said, in your own practice, you're probably in a good medical oncology practice, but, you know, mm-hmm. if a patient came in asking for something, you're more likely to attend to it, whereas you're not necessarily
right.
stimulating that conversation. So, you know, obviously there are going to be forward-thinking oncology practices across the United States that are trying to do this, following through on the recommendation, but we know there's a gap. So where the patient can start to initiate this, well-intentioned, very supportive physicians and their health professionals who work with them will be very responsive. So we've got to kind of go at it from both directions.
Right. How about for the rarer patient who doesn't have any computer training or knowledge or doesn't even have a computer? How would they be brought into the system, so to speak.
Well, I think that's a problem for any of these electronic tools. Obviously, the competition that we're in is focused on that. But we know of practices where a nurse will sit down with the patient and help them do this, you know, on and off. Computer. I mean, ideally, for those patients who can't initiate this themselves, their healthcare practitioner should be doing this for them. So my guess is, you know, give us another 5 to 10 years, and this will be standard of care. But it just takes a long time.
Right. Greg, do you have anything that you'd like to ask?
I was just I'm looking at the website. I encourage everyone to take a look at it, that journeyforward.org. And it's noteworthy that they're in a 5.0 version of the program, so they've been at it a while. And I was just wondering, there are sample care plans listed on the site, including breast, colon, lymphoma, lung, and prostate. I was wondering, are you integrating it all with the social side? Because I don't necessarily see any kind of community development here, or am I just not looking in the right place?
Well, the idea would be, you know, obviously this could be used by anyone in the world, so that you can actually import into the library or have as resources all the community organizations that you would want to refer to. So the ones that are listed in the resource pages in the library are national resources that might have a hotline or a website. But the idea is, if you're practicing in Marin, is that where you were? Said you were?
I'm in Marin.
So, you know, whatever local resources, if there's a local support group, you know, one would refer to those groups and those organizations. If there was a program at the YMCA or the YWCA, you'd refer to those local resources. So it's quite flexible in that a practice can tailor it to their environment. But much of the resources that are there are kind of standard existing written resources and web-based resources.
So the topical, for instance, in the survivorship library listing, these are really topically focused. They wouldn't necessarily spin off a community of interest, perhaps like patients like me. Is that correct?
No, I mean, again, the information that you see on Journey Forward today is one that's geared towards health professionals. So my expectation is, as we launch My Care Plan, which again is not yet activated, but we're about ready to go live with it, it will probably link to patient communities, I'm sure. But again, the existing Journey Forward website has been predominantly developed for healthcare providers, and so I think with the MyCare plan, I would expect to see those kind of patient-related sites linking into that.
Okay, excellent. That makes sense. So my last thought or question is just the eclectic nature of how this came together between WellPoint, Anthem, Genentech, UCLA, and then the National Coalition. Oh, who stewarded this? Who sort of brought the parties together? Because it's an interesting assembly of stakeholders.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, Jennifer Hausman is the individual who I've been working with since late 2005. We actually put together some survey questions that they fielded in WellPoint to see how often primary care doctors were receiving treatment summaries and care plans, just to get a sense of what was going on. It was part of their regular physician or provider survey, and then she actually was interested in putting on an educational program that I was involved with in mid-2006, and then by the end of 2006, she was just really the driving force. I have to give her great credit to bringing everyone together, and we had a meeting, and we all decided this was something that we wanted to do, and the product, you know, really took place and evolved over the course of the next couple of years. We did focus groups with physicians, focus groups with patients. We looked at the landscape, and this is the tool. We had a great creative team, so this is where we went.
Great.
Well, many kudos. And
I,
as one who's been involved in this Crowd Care for Cancer Challenge, I've just been blown away by the quality of the applicants. So unless Rich or Dr. Gans, you have any last words, we'll just sort of wrap it up.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing to get the word out, and I'm just grateful that we have people like you who are interested in this. So thanks a lot.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
And that'll be the last word for we've been speaking with Dr. Patricia Gans, who is one of the principal collaborators in the Journey Forward My Care Plan submission to Crowds Care for Cancer. I want to thank my partner, Dr. Richard Jess, for his time today. And please join us tomorrow. We'll hear from the Patients with Power, Bill Guthrie. This is Greg Nance. Oops. We're still live. We're still broadcasting.
Okay.
So now, officially or unofficially, in overtime, if there's anything else we want to cover, we could certainly bring it up or wrap it up. Dr. Gans?
I don't know if you have any other questions, but, you know, I think what we did with the development of the My Care Plan, I think, was just the evolution of where we're going with patients taking much more responsibility and engagement in their health. And, you know, we've all learned that, you know, a doctor or a nurse can tell somebody what to do, but behavioral change really is dependent on the person's motivation to do that. And I think by motivating patients to be engaged in their post-treatment care and even initiating them, empowering them to initiate these care plans, I think will go a long way to them getting the answers and recommendations that they need and then following through. So I'm very excited about this.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask, we're three voices in this conversation who have been at it for a while, and you're in a unique spot with the academic perch, also perhaps even an activist at the patient level, plus a clinician, plus researcher, with ties to both the School of Medicine and the School of Public Health. Do you see some convergence happening here, which historically been more siloed conversations? Do you think it's different today?
You know, I don't know that it's that much different. I mean, I think, you know, when I think back, I started doing quality of life and outcomes assessment in the, you know, the early 1980s. I chaired a workshop in the early 1990s at the NCI about trying to get patient-reported outcomes included in quality in clinical trials, and it was like an uphill battle. And now it's 20 years later, and it's accepted. So these things just are not part of the medical lexicon. And unless physicians are going to be trained differently in the future, I just don't think, you know, I'm a hybrid, and I was always interested in these issues, but very few, you know, even somebody like Doug Blaney, who you interviewed a few weeks ago, he and I were on the Quality Symposium last year, and he's a great clinician, but he doesn't know anything about these behavioral oncology techniques, just like you were, you know, talking about yoga. I mean, you don't read that literature. You know, I read both literatures, and there just are a small number of oncologists who do. So it's a real challenge to have cross-disciplinary training, and I think that's why we need team-based care, because the physician does not need to do it all, and I think if the physician can share that care with other professionals, whether they're mental health professionals, nurses, you know, people in rehabilitation, whatever it is, we'll do more for the patient by having those disciplines bring their skills in.
Right. That quote, I mean, that team-based comment caused me to reflect back on a conference I was sitting in, and the speaker had a slide up, and it talked about the amazing advances in medicine over the last 50 years, and now the next 50 is going to be all these advances in this team-based coordinated care conversation. It was Henry Mayo in 19, God knows when, 20-something.
Yeah, and see where we are. We're not there yet. Yeah. No,
right.
I know. So, I mean, I think we all have to think about how would you want to be cared for? How would you want your family to be cared for? And you want the most knowledgeable person to, you know, chart the course of care for you, but that's not always the physician. The most knowledgeable person to handle your persistent pain, you know, fatigue, sleep disturbance is probably not the physician. So, physicians need to acknowledge that.
Right. That's really one of the breaks in the system. Acknowledgement by the physician. You hit it right on the head.
Well, I think with that, we will say thank you again. We've been speaking with Dr. Patricia Gans, who's a principal collaborator in the Journey Forward My Care Plan, a submission under the Crowds Care for Cancer competition underway. And I want to thank my partner and co-host, Dr. Richard Jess, for his time. We do this weekly, and we're in a special series right now on the Crowds Care for Cancer introduction to the three finalists. So we'll conclude today with Journey Forward My Care Plan, and tomorrow we will talk with Bill Guthrie from Patients with Power. So please join us then. This is Greg Masters for This Week in Oncology, saying bye now.
Bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
That was when I ruled the world.